Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Thanks to Pete Metters for the update. You will hear from him again in a moment as we kick off the Beltway Blitz. The Nationals just made an announcement, by the way, that they have given out some new titles to a couple of their top executives, among them Mark Schlaba, who's the director of player development, who we had on one of our pregame shows ahead of the World Series. He's done a great job building the system. He has become an assistant to the general manager on the player development side. And Johnny DePuglia, well-earned. He, of course, is the international scout, runs the international department that brought in Victor Robles, Juan Soto, and we heard the story on MLB Network recently when he was named the Scout of the Year internationally, that he also had a deal verbally in place with Ronald Acuna, but he just couldn't get that deal done after Acuna came back and wanted more money.
And it's one of those things, every scout, everybody that's done this for more than 10 minutes has 75 of those stories. There's a guy who works for the Braves right now that's like, we had Anthony Rendon, we drafted him, we just couldn't get to the terms right, and he went to Rice. Everybody's got that story, but man, was that an eye-opener.
Let's start the Beltway Blitz on the diamond with the aforementioned Nats. Our own Pete Medhurst was covering the proceedings yesterday and would have loved to have had Pete on from the Strasburg press conference, but we were busy skewering Bruce Allen. 4 hours on his anniversary day, so we apologize for that, Pete. But let's talk to you about it now. What did you take away from Strauss's reintroduction to D.C.?
Saw three rich people sitting at a table. First of all, the suntanned Scott Boras over there to the far right, Mike Rizzo to the left, and then, of course, the man in the middle, Steven Strasburg. The thing I noticed, Grant, and obviously his season showed us how much he had opened up as a person and a guy that had always kept to himself but was hugging his players and dancing and doing all of that. I looked at a player, Grant, that I thought was at ease and in complete control and confident of everything that was going around him. And sometimes I think that spotlight maybe earlier in Steven's career may have, you know, not necessarily bothered him, but certainly put him in an uncomfortable situation. I saw a guy yesterday that was in complete control up there and very confident, very in control about not only what had happened, but certainly I think his future as well. I think he's a guy very confident going on that he's going to be able to fulfill this 7-year, $245 million contract in a positive way for the team.
Pete, if it's not Donaldson, what's the idea? What's the big plan? I've suggested going after a couple outfielders, maybe moving Juan Soto to first base. It doesn't fill your third base hole, but it makes the loss of Anthony Rendon that much maybe less impactful. What do you think the plan is here if it's not Donaldson?
I think deeper into the plan's got to be someone that you feel confidently is going to be some form of protection for Juan Soto. Now, Donaldson provides that simply because of the power numbers that he's capable of when healthy. If it's not him, then it really becomes a big conversation. I mean, do you give up what might be necessary to obtain a Chris Bryant? Possibly a less price for a guy like a Kyle Seager out there. I thought Grant brought up an interesting name last week with Hunter Dozier, a guy that still seems to have some of those talents that you're looking for out there, but maybe hasn't quite maximized it. Maybe a Kevin Long can help bring some more out of a player that I think maybe Kansas City thought was going to be even more talented than he has shown so far. So the question becomes at this point is what's going to be the price? What kind of price does the Nationals have to give up in terms of prospects? Because there are very few guys right now that are ready to step in at this point. The better guys right now are obviously in the lower minors.
Pete, I hate to ask about a guy that got away, but that was the first availability and access since Rendon walked. Any questions or scuttlebutt on that? And even just kind of talking to the other reporters and people in the building, were they saying about the Rendon decision?
I mean, I think the company line is Anthony's earned the opportunity, and clearly, based on what we are learning daily, seemingly coming out now, has had his eyes set on Anaheim for a while. apparently, if you believe everything that was stated. However, I do believe, if you heard Steven Strasburg yesterday, he kind of publicly sent out a retort to other potential guys that, hey, this is a family-oriented place. They do treat you like family here, after Anthony had alleged perhaps that, you know, the fact that families weren't necessarily welcome along the World Series journey on the airplane. But at the same time, if you talk to other people and other managers, there have been teams that have had mass chaos in playoff situations when families have been on airplanes and things of that nature. So I think that's, if anything, that's maybe what the Nats were hoping to avoid by making that kind of move. But don't disbelieve for 1 minute that this is not a family atmosphere. And I thought Steven Strasburg made that perfectly clear. But every guy to a man has said they respect Anthony Rendon, loved him as a teammate, and he earned the right to choose where he could go play. That seems to be the company line all the way across from Mike Rizzo all the way on down, involving Anthony Rendon.
Pete, thank you, buddy.
You got it, pal.
All right, we will talk to you later. Let's talk some puck, please. Brian McNally, NBC Sports Washington, will come on to do that very thing. Brian, at the fate of the world, Space Jam style, rested on the Washington Capitals beating an opponent, I would feel great, unless it's the Columbus Blue Jackets. What the hell is going on?
Yeah, great question, Danny. You know, look, first of all, Columbus is not really scared of the Caps after the playoffs a couple of years ago. They still have a core group of guys who absolutely feel like they should have won that first round series. You know, they were up 2-0, obviously blew it. Caps went on to win the cup. Tough for them. But, you know, I think there's still that Tortorella, us against the world feel when the Jackets play the Caps. And to be honest, because they lost so many key players in the offseason, the Caps probably don't feel the same way. It's why you see them getting up for and beating, say, Boston and Tampa Bay, and in that same stretch not being able to muster the same energy against the Blue Jackets. So luckily for them, they get one more shot at them coming up right after the Christmas break here in D.C. So we'll see if the Caps have learned from these two kind of humbling losses to the Jackets recently.
Couple more idle days for the Caps, and then they play on Friday night in New Jersey against the Devils, and this is a team they should dominate. How about New Jersey, by the way? Off-season champions, everyone was feeling good. They've gotten nothing from PK Subban, and they're blowing it up now. They just traded their former MVP.
Disaster for them, Grant. I mean, that was a team that some people had maybe making a playoff push. You know, they were good a couple of years ago. It looked like their rebuild had sped up, and they had added some good young talent, and now just this week they're trading Taylor Hall, recent Hart Trophy winner, and pretty much starting over, as you said. So still a team with some good young talent, but a lot of the veterans that they brought in the offseason, those dudes are going to be trade bait. The Devils are pretty much just playing out the string before we even get to New Year's. So that's another game. The Caps have the Tampa Bay coming up. They have Boston coming up. Got to get points against these bad teams and not, you know, negate the wins you have against the good ones. So Friday on the road against New Jersey, another instance where you got to create your own energy and find a way to beat a team that you should crush. I mean, that should not be you know, any given night. I get it, but the Devils are bad and just traded their best player. So a game you got to win there.
Brian, thank you, buddy. Always appreciate the time, man.
Thanks, guys.
Beltway Blitz every day at noon on at least two of the teams you love and care about in town. Next, we will look at the NFL playoff matchups as they're constructed right now. Which games are best? Which games would be least entertaining? Pick some winners and see who could still squeak their way into the postseason as we look at the NFL grid on Grant and Danny. With 2 weeks to go, we mostly know who's going to make the playoffs. We don't yet know the seeding, and there are a couple of still spots up for grabs and to be determined. So let's take a good look at the NFL's playoff picture right now as we welcome you back on Grant and Danny on 106.7 The Fan. You want to start AFC or NFC?
AFC, because I feel like there's less intrigue there.
In the AFC, the Ravens, as of right now at 12-2, are your unquestioned number one seed. The Patriots would get a bye as the 2 seed at 11-3. They are one game better than both the Chiefs and the Bills, 10-4, who would be playing in the opening weekend as the 3 and the 5 seeds, because Buffalo would have to go on the road as a wild card team. But here's what's interesting about the top of the AFC. If the Ravens win one more game, They get to 13-3. They will be the number one seed in the AFC because they have a tiebreaker over New England, the only team that could catch them right now. So all they have to do is win one of their final two games, and the Ravens are going to be the one seed in the AFC. They play the Browns this weekend and the 8-6 Steelers in Week 17.
And they could pretty much stick a fork in the Browns, too, who are still alive but barely.
Yeah, they're in the hunt as of right now. They've got to go 2-0 against Baltimore and Cincinnati. They're going to beat Cincinnati. If they do that, they're 8-8. They would need the Steelers to lose both of their remaining games to fall to 8-8 against the Jets and the Ravens. Obviously, they're probably going to lose to the Ravens. But if the Ravens have nothing to play for, all of a sudden Pittsburgh could win that game. They would need the Titans, who are ahead of them in the hunt, 8-6, to lose both of their games, fall to 8-8. They play the Saints and the Texans. That's a really tough schedule.
That is tough
for the Titans. And then the Raiders are 6-8. They would have to lose both of their games as well to get to 8-8. Chargers and Broncos. So basically, the Browns need three teams to go 0-2, and they need to go 2-0 with the Ravens on the schedule.
So that's pretty much
good
all
luck.
But over, yeah.
But the Ravens likely to be the one seed. If the Patriots hang on to the two seed, they'll get an opening bye, but they'll have to go on the road eventually to Baltimore if the Ravens can win their way to the AFC Championship.
Patriots
game.
Have the Bills one more time?
They play the Bills this weekend.
There it is, yeah.
10-4, and then they play the Dolphins 3-11. If the Bills beat the Patriots this weekend, they would have a shot. They'd both be 11-4 going into Week 17 with some tiebreakers to have a really good chance to actually win the division. They have to beat New England and then get some help. The Jets, by the way, are 5-9. They're the Week 17 opponent, whereas New England plays Miami 3-11. You'd have to imagine both of those teams would win. It would be down to tiebreakers at that point with them having split head-to-head. But your current AFC playoff matchups are the Steelers at the Chiefs and the Bills at the Texans. I think Pittsburgh with Devlin Hodges against Kansas City is a terrible playoff game. I think KC wins that game by 12 or 13 and is probably favored by 9 or something like that.
And the Steelers' defense has got them in a good spot. I mean, what are they, 7-1 basically since a bunch of injuries and things and guys have gone down? The one loss is to Baltimore, and it was a really close game. But that's a pretender.
Before this weekend to Buffalo.
That's right, before this weekend. So now they're 7-2. But that's a pretender, right? They're cobbling it together. They're overachieving. It's a great coaching job. It's a great job by a bunch of unheralded players. But the clock will strike midnight on that run, right? Because Kansas City has gotten right.
Yeah, it's one thing to win some of these regular season games against bad teams, but then you run into a legitimate contender in the playoffs in Kansas City, and you're going to get exposed.
Who's got a great chance of being, 11-5 or 12-4, and, a lot of that was without Mahomes.
I actually think Bills-Texans, if that game stays put, could end up being the best overall matchup of the first round. Buffalo, great defensively. They run the ball pretty well. Josh Allen is really athletic and makes plays with his feet. He makes two or three great throws a game, misses two or three throws he should make just about every game as well. So he'll keep both clubs in the game. Texans have stinkers like they did 2 weeks ago where they just get embarrassed. Then they have games where they look great. They play the Bucs and the Titans the rest of the way. They'll go at worst probably 1-1, and they'll finish right around 10-6. But you could have a 10-6 versus a 11-5 there potentially in that matchup. I think that would be a really, really fun game.
It might end up sloppy too, right? Just because the Bills muck it up. They won a 19-17 kind of a game. But I'm with you. That would be the most intriguing matchup, I would say, especially in the AFC.
I think in the whole first round, because then we'll go to the NFC in a second. But the NFC games aren't a whole lot better as of right now, in my opinion. Why don't we start at the top of the conference? So Seattle's 11-3. There are four teams with that record right now, 11-3. So the one seeds are very much up for grabs. The Seahawks' remaining schedule, Cardinals, 49ers. Let's say they go 1-1 in those two games. That gets them to 12-4. San Francisco's got Seattle. We're saying they beat them and the Rams. If they beat the Rams then, they get to 13-3, they're a one seed. So they've got an inside path to do that. The New Orleans Saints right now are also 11-3. They play the Titans and the Panthers. It's not an easy final two games necessarily.
But it's not as hard as what San Francisco has to go through.
No, not at all. The last team that's 11-3 is the Packers. They play the 10-4 Vikings this weekend and the 3-10-1 Lions.
That Vikings game is the game. That's
it's big. I can't see them going worse than 1-1, though. They're not losing to Detroit.
Agreed.
The Vikings, by the way, if they beat the Packers this weekend, and both of those teams are 11-4 going into Week 17, they play the Bears while the Pack play the Lions.
Mm-hmm.
So they'd still be up against it a little bit because Chicago's a much more difficult opponent.
So there's some jumbling. There are four teams, as I can see it, that have legitimate shots at bye weeks, at division championships, at hosting playoff games. And what we think we know now, we may not know here in a couple
weeks. Even if you throw, honestly, if you throw the Vikings into that mix, I think there's five teams
that have
a chance at bye weeks. Because the Seahawks, the Packers, the 49ers, the Saints, and the Vikings.
I literally just miscounted. That's amazing. Yeah, there are five teams. You're right about that.
And then you got the Cowboys. And we pretty much know Cowboys, Eagles, NFC East is the only thing that's still to be determined. The Rams are not dead yet, but they are really, really close, man. We're hitting them with the defibrillators.
That loss this week was bad.
They're flatlining. They got the 49ers this weekend. If they lose, they're eliminated. And the Cardinals after that. But right now, here are your matchups. Because the Seahawks are the one seed. The Packers are the two seed. They get the byes as of this moment. Vikings, Saints, and 49ers, Cowboys. So San Francisco, Dallas, is to me, won't be a good football game. That's a great team and a fraud.
Unless it's the Dallas from this past week that looked amazing against the Rams. Do you think there's any chance that's the new Dallas, that they play well down the stretch with as much talent as they have?
I think they play something like that this weekend and destroy the Eagles, because I think the Eagles, after watching them this past week, are really bad defensively.
Yeah, they're not the truth.
So I think they probably beat the Eagles by two touchdowns,
mm-hmm.
but I can't see them giving like San Francisco a game. I just can't.
I wouldn't think so, but it's going to be at home. Weird stuff. If you're asking me to pick it, I'd say San Francisco wins that game and handle it because they're the better team. But I could see something funky happening.
The one game that could be really good is Vikings-Saints.
That's my game of the weekend there.
However, that's better than Bills-Texans.
It is for me.
The Vikings' defense is just not good. Anyone who watches them can tell you this, and New Orleans' offense is great. I don't think that would be that close of a game. I could see Minnesota winning a playoff game if they get the right matchup. If they end up with, say, Green Bay, at Green Bay, mm-hmm. or if they got to play certainly Dallas and Dallas somehow, those are win. The Dallas game would be a win. They'd beat the Cowboys. The Green Bay game would be a toss-up. I think they'd even have a much better time against Seattle, even though that would be there, who they played pretty well in a Monday Night Football game, pretty close. I think New Orleans would be the worst matchup for them. I don't think that'd be that close of a game.
See, I do. I think Minnesota can score. And New Orleans' defense is good, but it's not unbelievable. We just saw them give up damn near 50 to San Francisco a couple weeks back. They're not invincible on that side. I think Minnesota could, you know, do some things, especially if you got Thielen healthy. Having those bookends and Dalvin Cook and Kyle Rudolph Cook a little bit, I could see them being in a 30-28 kind of game.
Thielen did finally come back this past weekend. Three catches, I think, in that game. That's not that telling. I mean, they were up big and kind of shut it down.
Right, right, right.
And they did the Mike Zimmer move where they just handed it off on first, second, and third.
As well punt on first, Mike.
I hate when they do that, but they love it. It's like the fourth quarter of these games where they're up a couple touchdowns.
They love that so much.
They run some clock and punt the football back.
Plus, you have the inevitable intrigue of a couple years ago. Minnesota is dead to rights, shouldn't be winning, and Case Keenum, the Stephon Diggs, the missed tackle. You get to replay that a little bit. That's exciting. So I would vote for that matchup.
Grant and Danny on the Fan. That is your playoff picture as of right now. Let's get to our power rankings and our NFL top five. It is Wednesday. Normally we do that at 12:45, but we got Gil Brandt coming up in about 15 minutes, a Hall of Famer. So when a Hall of Famer is willing to come on the show, you move some things around. We're G&D on the Fan. Gil Brandt of the NFL Network and NFL Media, a Pro Football Hall of Famer, is going to join us at 12:45 to go around the National Football League. Also, the top 100 all-time players list continuing to be unveiled. The finalists for the NFL all-time wide receiver portion of the roster are out. And we will talk about that with him coming up on G&D next segment. Right now, though, it is time for our NFL power rankings. So, Danny, let's go 1-5. We did this last week. A little more intrigue now at the bottom of these lists. So start us off with the best team in football as you see it.
It's the same team we've been talking about for the last few weeks. The Baltimore Ravens are the best team in the NFL. It's the defense that's really come on. I keep beating this drum. Offensively, they're amazing. We know Lamar Jackson. He's the MVP. It's a different guy every week in terms of who receives. It's a different guy each week in terms of rushing. An additional Lamar Jackson, who, by the way, would be a top five running back in the NFL with the numbers that he's put up. Just in terms of fantasy stats, but you add in all the passing that he's done as well. The Ravens, number one team in the league.
Yeah, Lamar Jackson's going to win the MVP award as a 22-year-old in the National Football League. But you know, he's not the only great player in this offense. The other guys benefit from him clearly. But the year Mark Ingram had, for me, is really impressive. He's averaging 5 yards per carry. Doesn't get the ball that often, but he's got 963 yards. He He'll end up with 1,000. I also like Gus Edwards when he touches the football. He's averaging 5.2 yards per carry. As far as the passing game goes, it's mostly through the tight ends. Mark Andrews is a 800-yard tight end after this weekend. Hollywood Brown has not had the rookie season I anticipated, but has scored 7 touchdowns and makes some big plays down the field as well. The Ravens' offense is dynamic. As you said, their defense is stingy and physical, and it can beat you up. They are my number one team in the NFL as well. Who's your number two squad?
I still have the San Francisco 49ers. After that bad loss to Atlanta at home, they kind of got caught on their heels a little bit after that epic game where they went back and forth, a heavyweight 15-round knockout title fight with New Orleans on the road. They caught on their heels a bit by a frisky Atlanta team. I give them a mulligan. They got enough deposits in the bank for me where they are excellent. I think the defense will travel. I think you'll see them bounce back here in the coming weeks. They got ambushed a little bit. Probably still should have won that game. They're still my number two, but it's more tenuous than it was a week ago at this time.
I will go with the New Orleans Saints as the number two team in the NFL right now, meaning I guess my Super Bowl matchup as of this moment would be the Saints and the Ravens.
There you go.
But I just loved what I saw from them Monday night. Drew Brees was nearly perfect. I mean, you hear people say all the time, oh, quarterbacks can't play perfect games. He almost did. He was 29 of 30 with 4 touchdown passes in a historical performance. He's got 21 touches and 4 picks on the year. And they're really rounding into form. The efficiency's down a little bit for Alvin Kamara, who's got 152 carries. I really like the way they use Latavius Murray. Averages 4.5 a pop. He's a 500-yard, 5 touchdown, number 2 back. Their passing game goes through Michael Thomas, who should be an MVP candidate, who's going to end up with 150 catches for about 1,800 yards and around a dozen touchdowns this year probably. Alvin Kamara's going to catch 85 balls as a running back. Everyone else, it's just spread around. You know, a bunch of 20 and 30 catch guys, whoever's open. But then defensively as well, they get after the quarterback. They regularly, a lot of contact with Cameron Jordan, Marcus Davenport in the backfield, Trey Hendrickson, 9 quarterback hits this year. Look at the sack counts, 13.5 now for Cam Jordan. I love the Saints. They're my number two team.
Saints are 3 for me. The only reason they're not number two is I looked at their point differential. San Francisco twice as good of a point differential. Some of that is schedule, of course, but
yeah,
still.
And I also think recency is different. Like the 49ers built up a huge lead when they were beating the bad boys.
They did, and they're both 11-3, very good teams. Everything you just mentioned, I agree with. Fluky stat, though, Alvin Kamara only 2 touchdowns this year.
Crazy.
Just damn near impossible for a guy that's that good in space to not have broken one or more.
Has he been a fantasy bust? Because he still catches a lot of balls.
He's been a huge fantasy bust. There have been several first and second round busts. Guys like Juju Smith-Schuster, David Johnson, Alvin Kamara. He has not lived up to the billing. But they're really good. New Orleans is, as you kind of alluded to, they're excellent on offense, excellent on defense. There you go. That's what a top 5 team looks like.
Number 3 for me, I will flip-flop with you and go San Francisco for the reasons you mentioned. It's basically the resume they built up. I was thinking Seattle, those teams having played a pretty classic game that Seattle won, but I'm going to go San Francisco narrowly ahead of them because of the aforementioned point margin where they're plus 161 in scoring. Seattle is just plus 26 on the year. But I will put the Seahawks also 11-3, fourth on my list, right behind San Francisco. Big believer in the NFC West.
Seahawks fourth for me as well. I really, really like this construction. They know who they are. And again, I keep saying this. Defensively, they're rounding into form, and they'll be good come playoff time. You look at some of their numbers in terms of pressure. They don't get after the quarterback particularly well. They're not great. Sacks, quarterback hits, pressures, etc. I do think that will improve as they get down to it when they start building some leads and make teams more one-dimensional. This Seahawks team will give you fits, mostly because of how good Russell Wilson is. Chris Carson is a thumper. They find a way to mix and match. Trying to get Tyler Lockett healthy down the stretch. I like the Seahawks team. They're my number 4 squad.
Who is number 5 on your NFL power rank?
This was a heavy debate. The overall resume belongs to the Green Bay Packers, but I'm giving it to the Kansas City Chiefs, my friend. Green Bay is just outside looking in despite being 11-3. Point differential, only plus 47. Kansas City is plus 110 here. Kansas City, you give them a little bit of a pass dealing with a really banged up Pat Mahomes. They weren't quite the same. Banged up at running back. They're on their 15th guy. Doesn't matter for them. Now defensively, they're getting after it. They're a good fantasy pickup on defense here these last couple weeks. See what they did to Denver in the snow. Look like they're playing a different game than those guys. Kansas City right now is the 5th best team. And to me, the 2nd best team in the AFC.
Yeah, and Mahomes is back playing like a healthy MVP of a year ago. I'm a little frustrated because I thought I was going to do that and you were going to go Green Bay because you've been all over the Packers lately and I was in on the Chiefs, but I'll stick to the script. I'm going with the Chiefs. We'll have the same fifth team. I'll make the case for the Packers if you wanted to. Unlike Packers teams in the past, they got a couple ways to beat you. I still think Aaron Rodgers can saddle up and sling the ball around if he needs to, but Aaron Jones, a two-headed monster in their backfield, a running game that is grounding and pounding teams into submission. They are physical. You don't really want to deal with them if you're a defensive front because they wear you down over four quarters with Matt LaFleur calling plays. And defensively, they can rush the quarterback and make plays in the back end in the passing game. I still think you can run the ball all over them, which is why I think Minnesota this weekend could have some success.
Has a chance, yeah.
You know, the Vikings in a playoff game could give them some problems. Seattle would be a terrible playoff matchup. So it's going to be matchup dependent for them. I think they're better at defending the pass than the run.
So here's my case against Green Bay, who I still like, by the way. We're talking about one of the best teams in the league, so we're picking nits. Three things. One, the loss to the Chargers where they couldn't do anything a few weeks ago. Two, San Francisco beat their brains in 37-8 in that primetime game. That one was hard for me to unsee, and I really wasn't wowed against the Redskins. I know that was kind of a just enough game. You don't have to do too much and overextend yourself and just kind of get out of there with a victory. I thought they would beat the hell out of the Redskins. I really did. And they didn't. So that's knocked them down a tick to me or left them vulnerable to someone else that right now I feel is doing more, and that's what Kansas City's doing.
I get it. I mean, that Chargers game was November 3rd. So you're talking about a month and a half ago to still hold against them. The Redskins game was more recent. As you said, they were up by two touchdowns. I think they just kind of stepped off the gas pedal in that one. But, yeah, I think most teams have those games on their resumes, but I'm with you. I've got them outside of the top five right now as well. Gil Brandt joins us next, the Hall of Famer, on some of the matchups that we care about this weekend. We'll also talk to him about the top 100 all-time NFL players for the 100th year celebration for the league next on The Fan. Steamrolling toward 1 o'clock, the final hour of the show and the big one today. We're Grant and Danny. You are listening to The Fan. We are really pleased right now to go to the Mattress Warehouse Hotline. Welcome onto the show a Pro Football Hall of Famer as of the class of 2019. He's in the Cowboys Ring of Honor. We won't hold that against him here in D.C. A former VP of player personnel for the Cowboys from the 60s through the 80s. Gil Brandt is on the Mattress Warehouse Hotline. Gil, what a pleasure it is to have you on the show. Thanks for the time.
It's great to be on with you and Danny today. I really appreciate it. And, you know, the Redskins look like they're coming alive. That quarterback played pretty good last week.
Yeah, what have you seen, Gil? And what do you make of the way that this league has kind of changed in terms of developing quarterbacks? It used to be much more commonplace for a guy to sit. Now that's more rare. What have you seen from Haskins and his development?
Well, I think he's done a good job. Whoever is coaching him has done a good job of developing him. You know, this is a guy that is from Washington, D.C., the Bullis School, if I remember correctly, and is a player that didn't start at Ohio State in 2017. And then last year in 2018, he had 50 touchdown passes. Of course, he had some great receivers, and you've got one of those on your team there today. But I do think that he's a guy that I think he has to improve his footwork a little bit and keep his weight down. And he's got a rocket for an arm, and he's a real smart guy. So I think the Redskins and Mr. Allen finally got the right quarterback to help him in years to come, much to my chagrin as a Cowboy fan.
Gil, we've been waiting for that Haskins performance that we got this weekend for weeks. And, you know, he had struggled, and he is raw. But I'm curious, from your scouting days and your time running the personnel department, how long generally before you feel like you know who a quarterback is? Is there a number of games or an amount of time that needs to be allotted?
I think it's about 2.5 years is what it is. And I think he'll go through some highs and lows, you never know what he's going to do this week after having such a great performance last week or the week before. I guess he threw four interceptions. But he's going to throw those interceptions, and gradually the interceptions will become more touchdown passes and less interceptions. But I do think that the Redskins right now have the makings of a football team that can be scary, because I think they've got some good players on defense. I think they've got some good offensive players. And I know that Mr. Snyder is going to, with with Allen's help, is going to get the right head coach.
Gil Brandt with us here on Grant and Danny. Gil, looking at the NFC specifically, there's a lot of really good teams up at the top. Think of Green Bay, Minnesota, New Orleans, San Francisco, Seattle, et cetera. It feels like there's less parity than there's been in years past. Like the league's more top-heavy. Is that something you're seeing, and what do you account for that?
Well, let me say this to you. First of all, I hate to correct you, but I hate to use the word parity.
Okay.
I think it's competitive balance. I think we have the great competitive balance in this league like never before. And, yes, we have some good teams. Now, don't kid yourself that Philadelphia is not a good team and Dallas is not a good team, even though their record doesn't reflect it at 7-7. But I just think that the league as a whole, we got better players coming into it. We got great young quarterbacks because of what's happened in college football. They throw the ball so much more, and actually they start throwing it when they're in high school, and that 7-on-7 that they play now, that has developed so many more quarterbacks than ever before. So I think that we're just scratching the surface of what this league is going to be and is on its way to being.
Gil, one of the things you're involved with right now, one of the reasons we wanted to have you on, is in determining the top 100 in the NFL's 100 years, and you guys have another installment coming up, which we'll be watching this week, the NFL 100 All-Time Team Series continuing Friday at 8 p.m. Eastern on NFL Network, going to reveal wide receivers who made the team. Can you give us an idea of who all's involved and how this panel decides and how difficult this was at wideout?
Well, it was a great group of people that got together. I'm not sure how I was included, but let me give you an idea. Don Shula, John Madden, Bill Belichick, Art Schell, Craig Vermeil, Dick Vermeil, Ozzie Newsome. I think we have 25 people, and all of them are very, very familiar with it. And let me tell you some of the problems that you have in selecting them. How about the running back position? No Peterson, no Tony Dorsett. No LaDainian Tomlinson, yet you got a guy named Dutch Clark from Colorado College. And I didn't say Colorado University or Colorado State, but Colorado College. Here's a guy that finished back in the 30s and thought so much of football that he decided to stay on at Colorado College to become the head basketball coach. And after 1 year of being the head basketball coach, he decided to come into the National Football League or try in the National Football League, and he became a star with the Detroit Lions. The hardest thing about this was, number one, was picking who should be selected, because I don't care who you select, they're all great. They were all great, but who should I select? That was a tough part, and so we had a lot of good discussions, a lot of arguments, and as I said, Bill Belichick, as an example, did a fabulous job. Art Schell did a fabulous job. Guys that have been around this league for a long time. I don't know if I mentioned him, Ozzie Newsome. He's pretty good, 12 Pro Bowlers that he assembled on that Baltimore team right now. So we had a blue ribbon committee that started this project in May of 2018 and continued right up until early summer to this year.
The hardest thing for me, Gil, and I'm just a guy that watches football, I'm nowhere near the breadth of experience as you guys, but the hardest thing for me would be to try to quantify the different eras. How do you compare a Larry Fitzgerald to a Steve Largent to somebody in years past, when just the way that the game is played has evolved?
The guys in the 40s I haven't heard of that were like fullbacks as well.
Yeah, you caught 25 passes, and that's the equivalent of 120 today. How do you balance that? That'd be so tough to me.
Well, that's a great question. And see, here's the thing. Drew Pearson, who I think is a really tremendous football player for the Dallas Cowboys, he's the guy that on Thanksgiving Day caught that touchdown pass to beat years ago. But he led the league with 56 completions 1 year, yeah. Or receptions 1 year, and 54 another year. If he were playing today, he'd have 110 because of the fact that we just didn't throw the ball much then. And it was the same way with try to grade offensive linemen. You couldn't use your hands. You used to have to pass block with your shoulder and so forth and so on. And so it presented a problem, but I think that we knew enough about them that we were able to select them. And when you talk about the defensive linemen, they didn't forget about Gino Marchetti. They didn't forget about Bill Hewitt. Yeah, a lot of people remember Joe Green because of the Coke commercial. But John Randall, undrafted free agent, Buck Buchanan, small college guy. It was a lot of fun. And I say this, anybody that misses the next two shows, this week with the wide receivers, next week with the quarterbacks, they're missing something that they won't see again in 100 years.
Friday night at 8 on NFL Network, Gil Brandt on Grant and Danny. Before we let you go, I'm curious to get your thoughts on the NFC. There are four teams with identical 11-3 record all vying for the top seed. Of these four, Seattle, Green Bay, New Orleans, and San Francisco, who do you think is the best of that group?
Well, I think that they're all about equal, but I do think that maybe Seattle has the advantage because they play one of those two teams that you mentioned. They play the 49ers the last game at home, and usually the home team has an advantage, although last week seven visiting teams were favorites in games. I think the fact that Green Bay has to go to Minnesota is a little bit of a disadvantage there. But no matter which of the teams win it, and who would have figured that New Orleans was going to give up 38 points, or 48, I guess it was, to the 49ers and score in the last 38 seconds of the game. And that's what we're looking at the next 2 weeks, and I think it's a great schedule. You know, starting, we've got three great games, or five great games on Sunday, or on Saturday. And how about New England and Buffalo to show you two upstarts in the AFL?
The NFL All-Time Team Series continues this Friday, 8 p.m. Eastern on NFL Network, revealing the wide receivers who made the team. Gil Brandt intimately involved in that and kind enough to give us a few minutes. Gil, this was a treat, man. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Danny. Thank you, Grant. Appreciate it.
You got it. You will, Gil. A Hall of Famer. Pretty cool to have him on the show here on G&D. Next, there's going to be a lot of adults standing in line tomorrow for something they've been waiting for some time. When's the last time as an adult you've stood in line for something, and what would you actually wait in line for, if anything, at this point of your life? This is The Fan.
Some people are going to be waiting, GP. It's not time to wait when it comes to your health. That's why EMP 180's got their Why Wait offer. You sign up with EMP 180 for 6 weeks or more, and you get a bonus week for free. Get yourself through the holidays. Get a jump on 2020. Don't put it off to some resolution you won't follow through with. Take control of your life and your health now. I've done it. Grant's done it. So many of our listeners have done it. Change your life with EMP 180.
EMP 180 is a weight loss and nutrition company and now a proud partner of the Washington Capitals. Absolutely love that. The Caps have partnered with the D.C. area's leader in health, nutrition, and weight loss, our friends at EMP 180. They just did so recently because, like so many of our listeners, they saw the success that people like you and me and my brothers have had with the program, and a winner wants to be with a winner. Visit EMP180.com today to get your consultation set up before the holidays. That's EMP180.com or call them at 855-888-0180. That's 855-888-0180.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.